Kia ora and welcome to Our Changing World from Radio New Zealand National.
Glaciologist Nancy Butler has spent her last two summers in Antarctica, living in a tent hundreds of kilometres away from Scott Base.
Her team set up camp on Roosevelt Island to drill deep into the ice in search of clues about how quickly the Ross Ice Shelf, the smaller of Antarctica's two ice sheets, could retreat in a warming world.
Veronica Maduna meets Nancy between field seasons as she begins to analyse the cores she brought back from the ice.
So we're here in the National Ice Core Research Facility at GNS Science in Lower Hutt, which is a shared facility between GNS and Victoria University, but also many other organisations such as NIWA and international partners. This is the place where we bring all our Antarctic and also New Zealand ice cores back to process the cores and then forward our samples to various labs to measure those samples.
So I'd imagine you have to keep those cores as they would be in their natural environment?
Yeah, that's correct. They're very cozy, minus 35 degrees, and as we're going in there now, it's better if we put a few layers on as well. So I've got a couple of jackets here for you and gloves.
Great, let's do that.
So this is equipment that we also use in Antarctica, and obviously, you know, with these temperatures here at minus 35, it's just a perfect gear to use.
So if you spend the whole day in there, I guess you wouldn't be at minus 35 for a whole day. That's just where the cores are. Your working area must be a little warmer than that.
We have three different types of freezers. So we have one that we call our warm working freezer, and that's at minus 20. And that's a temperature that's relatively comfortable when you're fully dressed up. You still get, you know, cold nose and cold hands and that kind of thing. But with all the layering of clothes that we have here, other than that, you're actually quite comfortable. But every so often we do have to spend quite significant time in the minus 35 freezers as well, and you will feel as we go in there that you can sense your nostrils freezing up a bit and your eyelashes start to glue together from the ice buildup, and that's certainly quite a different level yet again. But if you move around and you work so that you produce a little bit of body heat, you're actually still quite comfortable as well. Just standing around is difficult.
I think I'd like a pair of gloves so I can keep holding those microphones. That just sounds slightly uncomfortable without gloves.
Well, I just got the perfect mittens for you here. They're called nose wipers. Would you like one of those?
Yes, please. Perfect.
So now we're going into the first freezer. This is what we call the ante room. In here it's only minus 5, and this pre-cools and dries all the air that goes into the colder freezer. So now we go into the minus 20 freezer.
So this is like a fridge, really?
This is like the warm area to warm up.
Wow, so this is minus 20. This is where you can actually spend the whole day working?
You can, yeah. I mean, it depends a little bit what you had for breakfast. You know, if you have a good cooked breakfast, it's actually quite comfortable here after a while when you're bundled up and you move around and you work, then that temperature feels quite good.
So do you find you need more calories working here?
It's a fantastic excuse to have more calories.
Well, because it would be true on ice. In Antarctica, it would be true that you can easily eat a lot more calories without putting on weight just by being in the cold.
That's very true, and it's one of those challenges, actually. If you do spend a lot of time on the ice, out in the field, in tents, you have to make sure that you're not losing too much weight. Normally, most people do lose some weight while being in the field. And so you normally make up for that by eating as much chocolate as you can and some rather hefty meals for lunch and dinners.
I'm already getting cold feet. Let's get into the next even colder room so we can see the cores.
Right, so here...
Wow. All right, you're definitely right about the freezing nostrils.
Yeah, so we are now in the storage freezers. We have two of those. And as you can see, we have here a whole shelf. All the shelves are full with white boxes. They look like styrofoam boxes, but they're very sturdy boxes that are made of polyurethane and have fantastic thermal insulation properties. So all our ice cores are in these boxes, which means they're sheltered from any short-term failure of the ice core facility, for example.
Your eyelashes are frosting up. I can see it. Let's look at the cores and get out of here quickly. Now, we'll be talking about a project called RICE, and they're ice cores taken or brought back from a particular place in Antarctica, Roosevelt Island. Tell me about why there.
That's right. So Roosevelt Island, this nice little blob of ice that sits at the northern edge of the Ross Ice Shelf. It's, strictly speaking, actually not an island, but a rise, because that little blob of ice is grounded below sea level. It's about 150 meters below sea level where you find the ground. But on top of it is 750 meters worth of ice. And so we went there the last two seasons to set up for the drilling project, which is called the Roosevelt Island Climate Evolution, or RICE project. And the wonderful thing about Roosevelt Island is that it's so close to the edge of the Ross Ice Shelf. That position means that we can study, by taking records from the past, what the Ross Ice Shelf did in the past. The history of the Ross Ice Shelf is very interesting to us because it links directly to the history of West Antarctica. And so the primary question that we're trying to answer is, how stable is the Ross Ice Shelf in a warming world? And with that, how stable is West Antarctica in a warming world? So here you can see a core from Roosevelt Island. This has been taken at the site right next to the deep drill site. This is a particular core from 100 meter depth. And you can see these beautiful layers of crystals from ice that precipitated in summer to ice that precipitated in winter. And so the winter layers are slightly denser and slightly darker, while you see the summer layers are a little bit lighter, and also the crystals are slightly bigger. And then also, if you look very, very carefully, you can see here those little bubbles. So these bubbles contain atmospheric gases from the time when the bubbles formed. And so these are real samples from the atmosphere of the past. So we can use the ice cores to reconstruct the climate, and we can use the bubbles to reconstruct the greenhouse gas concentrations at the same time.
Tell me more about it at minus 20 degrees, please. Let's go back. Wow. Never thought minus 20 could be this pleasant.
Yeah, suddenly it feels quite good, doesn't it?
It's quite warm. Now, you're obviously drilling through ice, and I guess ice doesn't go back in time quite as far as if you were drilling through sediment cores. Why are you choosing ice cores from this side?
So the primary advantage of ice cores is the exceptional resolution that you can achieve. So we have records now from Antarctica where we can see resolution of the monthly evolution of temperature back for 100 odd years. So using those records means that we can look at the rate of change of things that happen particularly fast.
So you're looking at annual resolutions. You can tell year by year what happened?
Yeah, we anticipate a record that will be annually resolved at least for the last 20,000, but possibly for the last 40,000 years. But we will combine this record with the results that we obtained from the Andril record. So as you possibly know, Andril was a very large international project that was led by New Zealand. Andril showed us that during the mid-Pliocene, which is a time period about 3 to 5 million years ago, temperatures were warmer than they were today by about 3 degrees. And that's really interesting because CO2 concentrations at that time were 400 parts per million.
Not far from what we're heading into?
No, this is very, very close. So right now, current CO2 concentration is 392 parts per million, and it increases by about 2 parts per million per year. So we only need another 4 or 5 years to be, for the very first time since the last 3 or 5 million years, at the same level as we were in the mid-Pliocene. Well, during the mid-Pliocene, the Andril project showed us that the Ross Ice Shelf disintegrated multiple times, about 40 times. And as part of that, not only the ice shelf disintegrated, but with it, West Antarctica collapsed, and many areas in East Antarctica started melting too. And when we look at sea level reconstructions from that time period, we know that sea levels increased somewhere between 10 and 30 meters. So that means conditions that were very similar to what we would expect within the next 100 years in terms of the CO2 concentrations led to very unstable situations in the Antarctic ice sheet, particularly the West Antarctic ice sheet and the Greenland ice sheets, with catastrophic consequences of sea level increase. And of course, if you think about the distribution of cities, and New Zealand is a very good example of that, if we had even just a few meters of sea level increase, or even just a meter of sea level increase, that certainly would pose some significant challenges for city planning.
If that project tells us so much already about the what happened to the Ross Ice Shelf and the West Antarctic Ice Sheet, why are you interested in a shorter time period? What more will it tell us?
Well, Andril was able to show us that there's a real concern that ice sheets could become unstable again under those conditions. What it couldn't tell us is how quickly could this happen over 50 or 500 years. And of course, if you want to plan and mitigate for such a future, this is a rather important question to answer as well. So there are no ice cores that go back to the mid-Pliocene. But what we can do instead is choose a time period where the Ross Ice Shelf experienced rapid change and identify the sensitivity of that change to annual or to temperature and sea surface temperature changes. And this is what we now can do for the very first time with the Roosevelt Island record. What we will try to do is reconstruct the temperature from the last glacial maximum, which was about 20,000 years ago, very cold conditions, and a rapid increase in warming in temperatures to temperatures that are now those that we experience in the Holocene for the last 10,000 years. The interesting aspect of the Ross Ice Shelf is that, quite in contrast to the northern hemispheric ice sheets, it started to retreat when global sea levels had already stabilized about 10,000 years ago. And so the major retreat of the Ross Ice Shelf, we know from sparse geological evidence, happened over the last 10,000 years or so.
And it was not caused by sea levels or not triggered by that?
So it was not caused by sea level. It was caused by atmospheric temperature and sea surface temperature changes. And of course, for the next 50 or 100 odd years or so, we think that the major driver for ice shelf collapse is likely to be temperature rather than sea level, even if we had, for example, a meter of sea level increase. And so to adjust the sensitivity of the Ross Ice Shelf to future change, this is very advantage to look at those last 10, 20,000 years.
So what do you need to do to actually find out any information about that? You've been there for two seasons now to set up a very remote camp. How long do you stay on ice?
So we stayed last year for 4 months, and this year we will stay for another 4 months again. And yes, it's a very remote place. It's one of the few places on the planet where there's no internet. So the only form of communication we have is a satellite phone and radio connection, which turns out to be relatively good, but also limits the opportunities in terms of just having conversations with your families or knowing what's going on in your workplace and so on. On the other hand, it allows you to really focus at the job at hand, and that certainly led to some very successful field seasons that we had at Roosevelt Island. So last year was a major breakthrough for us. This was very difficult for Antarctica and New Zealand to support, and they did incredibly well. We are 680 kilometers away from Scott Base, and our nearest neighbor is Seipel Dome, which is just over 500 kilometers away. And so it means even just the logistics of having good enough weather both at Scott Base and at the site to allow for flights can be quite challenging. But we made it there, all of us. We were a team of up to 14 people. We started up with setting up a very large infrastructure for obtaining the core. But of course, it started even much earlier than that. We had to build an ice core drilling system that allowed us to obtain this core. And so over the last 3 years, Alex Pine and Darcy Mandeno, our engineers, designed together with international collaborators from Denmark and the US this wonderful ice core drilling system that we now have. It's unique. It's the only such drilling system of its kind that is lightweight enough to be flown by small aircrafts such as Twin Otters or Baslers, and yet has the capability to go to 1,000 meter depth. And last year we deployed that drill, which was tested twice in Greenland, and we deployed it last year for the first time to Roosevelt Island, and we successfully drilled to 130 meters. We cased also the drill hole for stability, and we got beautiful, beautiful, high-quality core. So the scientists, including myself, were extremely happy with the drillers, and we now brought the core back, came back on a supply vessel from Antarctica, and awaits international core processing here in August when our partners from overseas are coming to help with the analyses.
How deep will you have to drill to get back to those 20 or 30,000 years?
The key time period for us is over the last 600 meters in the core. So the total depth is 750. But at about 600 meters is where we cross the 20,000 year mark. And this is really good for us because if you're too close to bedrock, the layers in the ice core become somewhat distorted from the flow. Ice flows like a liquid, like a very slow liquid, but it deforms. And so, again, the site was particularly good for us because that time period was far enough off the bedrock that we knew we would get a very high resolution record from that time period.
Great. So two more years on ice to actually get keep collecting?
So we hope the coming season that we complete all the drilling. And if the weather gods are kind, we will be able to fly everything out. And the drilling process will be completed. And then in the following year, only the groups that deploy measurements in the drill hole itself for temperature and ice flow and so forth would come back to do measurements. So by next year, we hope we have drilled to 750 meter depth. And once we have this record and have analyzed it, and these are hundreds of thousands of samples, and over 20 laboratories are involved worldwide in measuring all these samples. But once we got this record, we think that we will have an annual account of both the changes in temperature, of the air temperature, sea surface temperature, changes in sea ice, atmospheric circulation pattern, of course the greenhouse gas concentrations, and combine that with the retreat of the Ross Ice Shelf and elevation changes in West Antarctica. And these data will then be used in models to determine exactly the sensitivity of the Ross Ice Shelf to these changes in those parameters, and hence what we should expect over the next 50 to 200 years in terms of its response to the projected changes in warming that we will see.
That was Rutherford Discovery Fellow Nancy Bertler, a glaciologist at Victoria University and GNS Science.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this, you can find more stories on our webpage, radionz.co.nz/ourchangingworld. Ka kite anō.